Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast, where we will be discussing the May 2017 board meeting. My name is Matt Tilling, and I'm the Director of Education here at the Foundation. With me today, I have Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair, and also joining us today is Board Member Daryl Scott, who's going to talk with us about the new insurance standard. Sue, I'd like to start with the board meeting, and particularly the implementation and maintenance activities. The board ratified IFRIC interpretation uncertainty over income tax treatments.
Yes, we did. So this was IFRIC interpretation number 23, which relates to the measurement of income taxes in particular circumstances. And it's an interpretation that relates to our income tax standard IAS 12. And up until now, how to deal with income taxes when there's uncertainty about them wasn't covered by the standard. And this is sort of situations where, for example, you may not be 100% certain that something will be deductible for tax purposes. And so this interpretation tells you what to do about measurement in those circumstances. We've just issued the interpretation, I think, this week, and it's going to be effective from 2019.
We don't do that many interpretations.
No, we don't, because we're very careful about not making our literature too rules-based. So the last interpretation we issued was in December last year. But I guess as chair of the Interpretations Committee, it's a good opportunity to point out that that doesn't mean that we're not busy. Interpretations are something we do where we think we do need additional authoritative material to help people interpret the requirements in our standards. But a lot of what the committee does is through our agenda decisions, which we use where the committee decides that we already have clear requirements, but where we do take the opportunity to set out how we would apply those requirements to the questions that have been asked. And also we try to include as much helpful material as we can in those agenda decisions, really to assist people when they're applying IFRS standards.
The board also considered comments on the proposed amendments to IAS 28, Investments in Associates and Joint Ventures, which would clarify the IFRS 9 financial instruments and how it applies to long-term interests in associates or joint ventures.
That's right. So this was a proposal that we put out for comment as part of our last round of proposed annual improvements. And at the May meeting, the board confirmed that we will proceed to finalise these amendments to IAS 28, which will make it clear that an entity who has an investment in an associate or a joint venture that they're using IAS 28 to account for the associate, they should still apply IFRS 9 to long-term interests before they get to the loss allocation and impairment requirements in IAS 28. And what does that mean? It means in a nutshell that even when you're in the scope of 28 because you've got an associate, that you need to look at the expected credit loss model in IFRS 9 for accounting for things like debt instruments and those associates. Now, one of the things that became clear in the discussions that we had, both at the Interpretations Committee and at the board table on this, is that the interaction between those two standards can be quite tricky. And so in addition to the amendment to IAS 28, we've also decided that we'll develop some educational materials that really just help to illustrate how that interaction should work for people when they're applying those standards.
And the remaining agenda items were non-decision-making sessions. Sue, can you tell us what these are and what were the main topics covered this month?
Sure. So some of the other topics that we covered were an education session on dynamic risk management, where the staff took us through a bit more analysis on the risk management activities that banks are undertaking. We also had an update from the staff on the work that we've been doing supporting those implementing the new leases standard, IFRS 16, and we had some discussions that are sort of further developing the thinking on our projects on rate-regulated activities and also on goodwill and impairment. So not decision-making, but important for the staff to sort of further develop the papers to lead us towards decision-making on those projects.
We also launched our IFRS 13 post-implementation review. Can you tell us about a PIR, or post-implementation review? What does it mean, and does it always mean that the standard's going to change?
Okay, well, our post-implementation reviews, or PIRs as we call them for short, are a sort of formal part of our due process and standard-setting activities. So in our due process requirements, we say that after a major new standard has been applied for a few years globally, we'll sort of take stock and collect evidence from around the world on how that standard's working in practice. So what we do first of all is we do interviews with people to work out the sort of main areas of interest for the post-implementation review. We'd done that previously. And what we're now doing is moving to the next step of the PIR, which is a request for information, where we're asking people to come back with some specific information on particular areas of interest. So that's out for comment at the moment. The deadline for responses is the 22nd of September, and we've really focused on three or four key areas there where we think we want feedback from people. We've also asked a more general question about whether people think we need to develop some more education materials to support people when they're making fair value measurements in accordance with IFRS standards. And we ask a general question on whether there's anything else that people think that we should be aware of from practice and implementing the standard. In sort of parallel with that, we'll also be undertaking an academic literature review. We'll be looking at evidence from the academic literature on the application of IFRS 13. Once we've got the feedback from the request for information and from the academic review, the board then sort of stops and takes stock and works out whether there is indeed anything we need to action. And at that point in time, we start to think about whether we need to do research, whether we need to make changes to the standards. So it's very much, that's a very long-winded way of me saying it's very much an information gathering exercise that we then use to decide whether there's in fact any standard setting activity or educational support or any other actions that the board needs to take.
And today we have a new voice on the podcast. Joining us is Daryl, and you're here for one very special reason. We have a new standard, insurance.
Absolutely, Matt. The 18th of May was the date that we issued IFRS 17. I think it was a very exciting day for us at the ISB because it's a standard that's been in the making for a very long time. And I think many of our constituents would argue that it's a standard that is somewhat overdue. We also think this is a standard that's going to have a very big impact. The insurance industry is an important central industry in the world economy, and we think providing investors with useful information in this space is an important step forward for IFRSs.
And you are obviously very involved with the development of this standard. What are the headline items?
So I think the starting point is that it provides current, updated information that is more transparent, that makes the activities of an insurance company better understood, and allows investors who use those financial statements to better understand the business and anticipate the future cash flows. We've done a couple of things in the standard. It splits profit lines between underwriting and investment activities, which are two important activities that insurance companies have, but which would have very different economic drivers. And we think understanding those two sets of results is a really important part of understanding what happens in the insurance space. And then the standard clearly distinguishes between those groups of contracts that are loss-making and those groups of contracts that are profit-making. And we think that helps establish a trend over time, understand where the business has come from and where it's going to, and again facilitates the better ability of investors to look forward and understand what's happening. And then I think what IFRS 17 does is it pulls all of this together in a comparable package. This is going to be the first really internationally accepted insurance standard, and what that does is it means that everybody will be reporting on the same basis, and insurance companies across the world will be comparable.
And now that the standard is out, what has the reaction been to the publication?
I think most of our stakeholders agree that this is a standard that is needed, that it's one that people have been waiting for, and over the course of the project we've heard support from all of our stakeholders on the view of actually developing a comprehensive insurance standard. From the investor side, investors and investor groups are still coming to terms with it, still getting an understanding of the full scope and process of the standard. But what we've started to hear is some very positive comments about the direction it's taken and about the type of information that it'll provide over time. From preparers, we've heard some comments now about things like the cost that it's going to take to implement it, and clearly the ISB anticipated and expected that there would be a number of costs involved in implementing a standard this big with changes this significant. And we expect both the normal things, changes in systems and changes in data, to come through. We also expect, though, that there's going to be a little bit of a change in the way at least some companies look at the risks they take on and the way they convey and report about and communicate about the profitability and the relationship that profitability has with risks. At the same time, having evaluated this cost side of it, the ISB looks on the other side of it at the potential benefits that come through from this. And we think that the benefits from transparency, from current reporting, from better understanding of the industry far outweigh those cost elements.
Obviously, there's a lot in the standard. If people need to find out more or need help with implementing the standard, what should they be doing?
So throughout the process of developing the standard, we've kept a lot of information and posted a lot of information on the ISB website. And clearly that information continues to be available as a starting point for people to look at to understand why decisions were made. Additionally, in the course of actually publishing the standard, we've published a number of different items of material that are available for people wanting to get a better understanding. And those range from high-level project summaries through things like a feedback analysis, which explains the decisions, to more detailed elements like the effects analysis and other parts of the standard. All of that material is also available now in various elements on the website and in other places for people to access and have a look at. We are going to set up a full implementation page on the website with a view to update and provide ongoing information about developments as we hear them and understand them. And the ISB is also committed to a webinar series, which will be released over time, which will address both issues that we anticipate people will be thinking about, issues where there might be a great deal of judgment required, and other areas where some discussion will facilitate the way people think about the words in the standard, but also address issues that we hear about through the other interactions that we have with constituents over time.
And of course, we will be running specific workshops on insurance at our upcoming conferences in Amsterdam, Dubai, and Toronto, and people can find more details about those conferences on our website. Turning away from the board meeting, May was a busy month for other reasons as well, Sue. So first off, we had a trustees meeting.
Yes, so an IFRS Foundation trustees meeting. We held that in Tokyo just a couple of weeks ago. It was a good discussion with the trustees. And in addition to the trustee meeting, as we often do, we organised a stakeholder event to take an opportunity to meet with people involved in the sort of IFRS community, if you like, in Japan while we were there. We did that together with the Financial Accounting Standards Foundation and the Accounting Standards Board of Japan, and there was a discussion about how IFRS financial statements can be used in the dialogue between preparers of financial statements and the people who use them, which is very topical for us given our better communication focus at the moment. Also, in connection with the trustees meeting, we published a joint statement with our Japanese friends, which reaffirmed our joint commitment to global standards and efforts to support Japanese companies in their adoption of IFRS standards.
We also signed an MOU with the World Bank this month.
Yes, a very important agreement for us, and that really confirms that we're going to be working with the World Bank to develop initiatives to support especially emerging countries when they're adopting IFRS and implementing our standards. So a really important partnership, if you like, for us globally.
Well, thank you, Sue. Thank you, Daryl, for joining us today. And thank you also to those of you who are listening. As always, any feedback on these podcasts would be greatly appreciated. And you can email communications@ifrs.org. The full summary of the board's discussion and decisions at the May meeting can be found in the ISB update on the IFRS Foundation's website. Thank you again, and we look forward to talking with you next month.